Once a month, we visit with our partners at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology for a segment we call Underground History. Chelsea Rose of Sula brings in people and stories about archaeology and the intricate and fascinating process of truly unearthing the past. Chelsea, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning. This month, the topic is names. This is a subject we broached recently in the discussion of Sume State Park north of Arcata. It got its old Yurok name back in a unanimous vote by the State Parks Board. The move propels us into a further discussion of names for places and things that changed as white settlers moved into the region. Our guest is Frankie Myers, the Yurok Tribe Vice Chair. Frankie, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thanks for having me. Squinicoy.
It is a pleasure. Squinicoy, is that the word?
Yeah, Squinicoy. It's a good morning.
All right. Thank you for that. We had several members of the board at True North Organizing Network on recently to talk about the renaming of Sume State Park. From the tribe's perspective, is that a big change?
It is a big change. And, you know, it marks this kind of shifting emotion we have in our partnership with the National and the State Park, you know, changing it back down to, or renaming it Sume, I think for the descendants of the village is huge, and for the tribe it's huge. I mean, to have a unanimous vote go through really is a huge step in building partnerships with the state. And, you know, earlier in the Newsom term, he had, you know, kind of apologized. He had apologized. He'd written an apology. And, you know, I think we all kind of sat back and said, well, we'll see. But, you know, it really does feel like, you know, there is a shift.
Given all the places that had names and got new names when white settlers filled the region, is the renaming of Sume a drop in the bucket, or is it bigger than that?
It's a bit of both. I mean, there's, you know, plenty of place names that could be changed back and were important. Sume is an important village. It was an important village to us traditionally. So, you know, being able to reclaim that name is extremely, extremely important. You know, most of our village sites that we have for Yurok, anyway, are, you know, still within the ancestral territory, still within, you know, the Yurok Reservation. The village of Oryk, mm-hmm. It remained Oryk through time. Rekwa and Klamath remained Rekwa. Sume was important because of just the amount of coverage that, you know, Patrick's Point got as just being a beautiful, fantastic place that people often visited. And so it was often in the vernacular of our local kind of regional area here. And so getting it changed and having that recognition was extremely important.
Yeah, but you mentioned places that have kept their original names, and I, you know, I realize as I think back through my life, I grew up on Long Island, and, you know, I got off the train at Wantagh, coming back from Manhattan, further down the line is Massapequa, so some names stayed, some didn't. Is there any particular rhyme or reason? I mean, you mentioned in Yurok country places that stayed within the domain of the native people there, but does it make much sense elsewhere?
It doesn't necessarily. I'll say, you know, anecdotally, it does feel like, you know, the folks who probably did the worst around here in our area usually got the names changed to them. And that's just kind of, for whatever reason our society works like it does, it seems to have been what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is certainly some halfway measures out there, I notice. An example being the renaming of what was Negro Ben Mountain and worse in the Applegate Valley to Ben Johnson Mountain. But I'll take a wild guess that people who lived there long before Ben Johnson had a name for it, too. Are there examples of that in Yurok country, too, the some halfway things?
There are some. The city of, you know, Arcata, you know, was kind of co-opted in, you know, move forward. You know, the thought of, we had a discussion of moving it back to its original Akeda and the Yurok word. And, there's not those specific examples per se. But I think, you know, for us, it really comes down to, you know, who's requesting the name change. You know, why is it important? And I think, you know, even as we're you know, talking about the name changed it back to Ben, it often feels like Indigenous people are still, you know, down the list for place names.
All right, so not the first consideration. Chelsea, come on in here and talk to us about toponyms and the larger idea of toponymy. For people who are not familiar with the words, fill us in.
Yeah, so I love listening to Frankie talk about these other names. I didn't know Auric was an indigenous name. That's really fascinating. So yeah, toponyms are important markers of, you know, moments in history where somebody named a place, either after a resource that was commonly gathered or, you know, a person or an activity that took place there. So they can be clues for archaeologists and historians, but they're also important cultural markers. So I think reclaiming some of these place names is really important and empowering for the folks who have deep histories there. Like, for example, at Patrick's Point, being named after one dude who was really violent and had a very negative impact on the region does not necessarily mark the most important moment in time in that place. So being able to reframe that place and the conversation around that place, I think, is excellent. And I love that that's kind of a trend that's happening more and more.
You know, interestingly enough, when I Googled the term toponym, it included a picture of a map with a pin stuck in Battle Creek, Michigan. And you can guess who one side of that battle was.
Yeah. And, you know, these things can be useful in addition to kind of having these political aspects. But, for example, we're still trying to track all the Chinese immigrants and their movement across the state of Oregon. And I have somebody going through topo maps to look at where you have China Gulch, China Flat, China Falls, all that thing, because those are clues to where Chinese individuals were mining or working historically. So, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why place names are interesting, but I think that, you know, there's this other part about you don't want them to continue to do violence to current populations if they have this association with a really negative thing.
It tends to be rather generic, too, though, in some of the European ancestor naming things. You know, China Creek or Chinaman this or China Gulch, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think some of those are not formal. You know, they're just kind of nicknames that stuck. So, you know, versus something that's named after somebody more formally. Yeah, I don't even know how names all, you know, come to be. Maybe Frankie has a better sense of that.
But. Well, yeah, I was going to come to you next, Frankie. And we're talking to Frankie Myers, the UROC Vice Chair, and Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. This is Underground History. You're welcome to weigh in on our discussion of names at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So when we stand back, Frankie, I do find myself wondering, like, well, wait a minute. So all the conventions we do will sometimes name places after people. We'll sometimes name them after the stuff you find there. You know, if there's a mine at the end of it, it's like, you know, Steel Creek or something. Is there any particular rhyme or reason to place names applied in UROC culture?
No, I think there's some real similarities on, you know, how humans across the globe name things. I think UROC is kind of lays right in the middle there. You know, we have the area Witchboost, where our, you know, we have a office there, and it means where the rivers come together. Down at the end of our reservation, we have the place we call Requa, and it means to take in, and it refers to where the ocean is taken in by the river. We have other places like Witchpeck, which is simply a name of a spring where people used to gather, and village of Shragon, where I'm from, which was named after the headman of the village a few thousand years ago. And so it's, you know, our traditional names can have very deep spiritual meanings about specific places where the creator, you know, did certain things. It could be a description, a physical description of where it's at, and the reference of Witchboost, where the you know, rivers come together, or, you know, a person like Shragon. So, you know, how we name things and how we used to name things traditionally, you know, I don't necessarily think is so much more different than kind of how we do now.
Yeah, it sure doesn't sound like it. It sounds like, you know, a person or, you know, something that happens there, or, you know, a steep cliff, or just any sort of thing that made sense to the people who lived there at the time.
And I think also some of this has to do, yeah, with what's relevant at the time. For example, I was just participated on like a looking at all the names of the buildings in the Ashland School District and kind of evaluating, are these names still appropriate today? Some of it's like harm reduction. Are these names associated with somebody that we don't want this building named after, mm-hmm. but also it's like what's going to inspire and connect people to the land. And so I think there's so many different motivations and things that make a place name important and relevant. And it's not bad necessarily if we reevaluate those things periodically. I think that's important.
You were talking specifically about the Ashland schools. There's only three elementary schools left. Did you find any issues with those names?
Well, in doing that, it's kind of complex because Lincoln has a complicated history. You know, most people tend to think of the good things, but there's a lot more complexity mm-hmm. to that. Same with John Muir.
Oh, yeah.
So all of these things is looking at this legacy and what, you know, kind of balancing that out versus, you know, what that means today. And it's a complicated conversation and a really important conversation, I think, to have.
Frankie, did I hear you agree with the Lincoln controversy?
I did. It, you know, I think, you know, for indigenous people, you know, one of the largest, killings of indigenous people came under Lincoln's reign, under his presidency. It's similar with Jefferson. I often think about, you know, Jefferson Public Radio, the State of Jefferson, and mm-hmm. and for indigenous people, that's, you know, not a name we would choose, that's for sure.
Right, yeah. In fact, we've talked about it, believe me, we had that original idea of Cascadia. Should we have gone there instead? So, I don't know if we'll continue to have those conversations here, honestly. But so to the broader ideas here about naming places, Frankie, are there still places in Yurok country that bear the slur term for a Native woman?
No, not so much anymore. As Chelsea had said, you know, there were some nicknames that had floated around for a little while that went away. There was a few slurs for places, you know, in reference of Chinese immigrants that, you know, we've kind of slowly just, you know, let go that were pretty prominent back in the turn of the century and even into the, you know, later century. But it's interesting to have the conversation because there are, you know, very much impacts with Chinese immigrants in our area. And so it is this very interesting conversation that we had to have for a while about, if we are using derogatory terms for another ethnicity for place names here, you know, what are we really, you know, doing? What are we asking ourselves? It was a very, I remember the time when we had this conversation within our community about what we were going to call things. And, Chinaman's Ditch wasn't the best mm-hmm. Name to use for certain locations, and we began changing that.
All right, so was there a fairly heated discussion? Was anybody sticking up for like, hey, we just know it by this name, let's keep that?
No, not necessarily. I think, you know, for the most part, it went pretty well. There were some folks that, you know, were still on the idea of, well, we've always called it this, let's just keep, you know, calling this kind of mantra. And it's the same thing we had similar to the conversation at Sioux May. Well, you know, we had people that came out, well, we've called this for 50 years, let's keep calling it this. And, you know, the conversation that we had internally is, well, that's okay if we called it for 50 years. But that was a small time frame. And I think that's what's really we try to push forward is indigenous people have been here for thousands of years, right? These places have had names for thousands and thousands of years. This small little tiny fraction of a time that we've spoken English and put English names for them is really pretty insignificant. If you want to change it, it really doesn't do a whole lot to the length and breadth of time the place has had names.
Reminds me of the talk about potentially renaming Fort Bragg, which is named for a Confederate officer.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole, correct. Yeah, the idea that people, well, if it's always been called that in my lifetime. Well, yes, but your lifetime is a rather small portion.
yes. And it's, the irony of that always always hits me when they don't want to change a place name because how long it's been named there. And then you think, well, it's been, you know, this indigenous name for 10,000 years. If we're going down that logic train, shouldn't you then be saying, yeah, we should change it to the original name?
Are some of the original names just lost to history for some of the places that have received the names of white people or places named by white people?
I don't think so. We went through all of our geography and for Humboldt, Del Norte, to Mendocino. And, you know, it is, I used to be the tribe's tribal heritage preservation mm-hmm. officer. So place names and going through our culture is interesting. And I will tell you this, any place that a human thinks is suitable for living or beautiful or has a nice view or, you know, someone would like to live, I guarantee you Indigenous people live there and had the same thought of why they lived there before, and it had a name. There is no place on this continent, if you sat down and said, man, this is a beautiful place, I should live here, that an Indigenous person didn't think that same thing before you and actually live there already.
Well, you know, people think the same things through history. Wow. Frankie Myers is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange on Underground History, the vice chair of the Yurok tribe, and Chelsea Rose, of course, from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, part of the conversation, too. You're welcome to join in at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Chelsea, it's not just place names, apparently.
Yeah, and one thing, too, I wanted to add that's really exciting to me about Sumé is it also is kind of a symbol of the survivance of the language, which, you know, has really become, you know, I don't know, it was survived and now it's getting more widespread, and that's another important marker of that, which I think is really cool. But, yeah, items can also be renamed. So, for example, Gunther Barbed Points are this archaeological points that are named after what was called Gunther Island at the time that this archaeologist excavated there many years ago. And that island is now returned to the Wiat people. I believe, I hopefully I'm saying that right. And there was a request that, hey, let's rename these Tolowat Points, which, of course, people in the archaeology community have done. So, again, naming these points after a white person who, actually, there was a massacre on that island, so they were associated with a really violent event rather than the people that made them and used them.
Mm-hmm. All right, so interesting. So are there other examples like that? I mean, in addition to the Gunther Barb points becoming Tolowat points?
Oh, there must be. Mm-hmm. That's just one that comes to mind, but I think that I'm sure there must be other examples, especially when it comes to pre-contact materials that have been named after whoever, you know, just happened to be around at the time, or whatever white archaeologist wanted to name them after himself, you know.
Frankie, how much? Go ahead.
I think that's an important one, though, and I just want to jump in here. You know, like I said, I was in, you know, heritage preservation mm-hmm. before, and every time that would come up, you know, this conversation of, you know, these names of things, you know, we still have in our oral history the massacre that occurred there, right? Mm-hmm. That is very much still within my family's line. You know, the stories that are told there, when it would come through, you know, it hurt, extremely, extremely hurtful to read and then to follow and then to have to reference myself, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a whole, you know, field, and we have, you know, folks on our staff who work through this, and I think it was a big move when we switched the name because it felt like our people were important and they were alive, and that that what happened there had a meaning.
Go ahead, Chelsea.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt there. I just want to say, in a self-reflective moment for archaeologists and anthropologists, to know, hey, be informed about the terms you're using, because some of these names are just not throwaway names. They can be associated with a lot of baggage that we definitely do not need to keep, you know, bringing into the literature.
Well, you know, I mentioned Battle Creek, and there's Battle Rock in Port Orford, and of course, this also involved, you know, white people versus Indigenous people, and you've studied at least some of the coastal area. I'm not sure if you got right there.
Yeah, so Battle Rock has been studied as part of the landscapes of war with the Rogue River Wars and stuff, and it is another important place. And the important thing to talk about these wars or these instances is to make sure that you are understanding and bringing in all the different stakeholders and perspectives on that. So I know the Coquel have a lot, you know, to say about that site, and so making sure that that perspective is not just told from the white army, but from the native peoples who, you know, had to live through that and live with the consequences of the event at that location.
We mentioned the slur name for Native women that is being removed from things like Palisades Tahoe ski area now has mm-hmm. Supplanted the name of where the Olympics were in 1960. Dan dropped a question off from the Phoenix Talent area. He talks about the demonization of lands like Devil's Lake, Devil's Tower. Were those necessarily demonizing people, or was it just because they thought it's a place where the devil would hang out?
You know, I think it could be a bit of both. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, we have, my brother lives in a creek right next to a creek or a watershed that's called Mahwah Creek. And the literal translation is Devil Creek, and it refers to where people would go and make bad medicine. Sometimes they absolutely are about places that were, that would make you sick, or that, you know, folks would go to make bad medicine. Other times, you know, not so much. It doesn't seem to necessarily have that same translation, you know, in English for place names. But for indigenous folks, usually when a place is named something like that, there is some reference to, you know, either some naturally occurring phenomenon that will make you sick or hurt you, or some place that you would go to gather, you know, materials to make bad medicine.
Okay. So certainly some longtime reference there. I noticed the UN, Frankie, has weighed in on this. It's not just American indigenous people speaking up for restoring place names and names of things. It's all over the world.
It is, and I think this is something that, you know, comes up more and more. Colonization, you know, is not specific to Yurok territory or the Americas, and this idea of, you know, you completely, you know, washing over, you know, and erase your culture of places that were there before you, you know, I think is gaining traction now as indigenous people across the globe, and as people across the globe really recognize the importance of names and the changing society they would live in, and the need to, you know, make some actions. And these are easy things to do. You know, changing, Patrick's Point State Park to Sume State Park, that's not hurting anyone. That, you know, it's not, you know, a big cost or anything like that. But it's very impactful to our local communities, to our region, and to the history. And so I think we're really starting to see the value of recognizing, you know, names and importance and changing them.
Frankie Myers is the vice chair of the Yurok Tribe and the former tribal heritage preservation officer of the tribe as well. Chelsea Rose, of course, from Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. This has been Underground History. Chelsea, thank you.
Oh, great to be here.
And Frankie, thank you.
Oh, welcome. Okay.